Welcome to Your Music Saved Us, where two friends blast ourselves into the past to relive and recontextualize the alternative Christian music we grew up listening to in the 1990s. My name is Jay. And with me is a very curious fool, Clifton. Clifton, how are you today?
Curious, confused, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see.
So, Clifton, what are we listening to this week?
We, Okay. We are doing... Curious Fools Red. Let's say red.
It's R-E-A-D, but the cover is red, so we don't know. You guess. Clifton, first of all, was this hard to find?
A little bit, yeah. There is a playlist on YouTube that you can listen to, and there's also, strangely enough, Goatee Records has a SoundCloud page. And it has all the albums that they've ever published on there, and this one's on there. So you can listen to it there. Yeah, but that's the only two places I could find it. We'll put both of those in our show notes, though.
And this came out in 1997, Goatee Records, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand, just a side note, why was Johnny Q Public Goatee Records 1995? That's on Spotify. Why is this not? I don't know. None of this makes
any sense.
That's a
very good question. I don't know. Like music contracts are weird.
True.
If that's what's going on here, I don't know.
I mean, does anyone really care? Anyway, we could talk about all this, but yes. So start off. Tell us a bit about the band, Clifton.
Yeah, sure. So I wasn't able to dig up a lot on the band. I could probably seriously read almost everything that's written or that's currently published on the internet right now in the time about this band and the time that we usually spend in this segment. But I'm gonna try to give you a summary here. Curious Fools are from Nashville, Tennessee. They started in 1991, and everyone says they started as a songwriting team. I don't know what that means, but I assume they weren't a band originally. I don't know. Curious Fools is Stephen Murray on vocals and guitar, and he's also the primary lyricist. And before Curious Fools, Stephen self-released a rock album in 1990 under his own name. I haven't heard that, but I have seen it. Troy Deaton on lead guitar and the co-lyricist. And from what I can tell, they had a touring bassist who might have been Oscar Carey, according to one website we looked at, but the album credits the bass as Talk. I don't know.
T-O-K.
T-O-K. Talk. Like tick, and then the next word. And on this album, on drums, is Shane Atkinson, although this is his last album with the band. And then according to Christian Rock Central, the band members literally drew ideas for the band's name out of a hat with like just single words on pieces of paper. And they drew the word curious and they drew the word fools. And that's how they got their name.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of thought. Okay. The members largely list 70s rock as their main inspiration, all referencing, of course, Led Zeppelin. But they released a self-titled album on Via Records in 1993 to some notice in music publications. And Via Records was owned and operated by the singer, Stephen Murray, and put out releases by Hoi Polloi, Fell Venus, Hocus Pick, Black Cherry Soda, and Michael Rowe, among others. In 1996, they recorded this album in 2 weeks at Alex the Great Studio in Nashville. By the way, I found other bands that recorded there in the 90s, including Yo La Tengo, Lost Straitjackets, Swan Dive, Lamb Chop, and Cotton Mather. So this album was originally released in 1996 on Via Records, on Stephen Murray's record label, but then it was picked up by Goatee Records, who re-released it in 1997 after signing the band.
One thing I saw related to that is that supposedly this album was released only to the secular market. Via when it came out. And then so I was reading back in Christian music news groups from the time, people were saying they could find it at like Best Buy or Camelot Music, that dates it, but they couldn't find it at the Christian bookstore until Goatee re-released it. So
Interesting.
I don't know why. I don't know what they were doing. I'm also curious if the original release looked like the one on Goatee.
It had the same publishing. Yeah.
But
and it was weird to me too, because in my timeline, me finding this album in 96 makes more sense than me finding this album in 97. I don't know.
I can see that. Maybe it was like January 96. I don't know. Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would have been driving by 97, and I remember that I was not driving when I found this album.
Okay.
So.
Well, I was going to ask, so when did this come into your life?
I don't know. We just went through there.
Do you remember your first experience with it?
No, I have a little confession to make here that I remember listening to this album back in the day. Like, I visceral remember, like, holding the CD case in my hands while listening to it. I remember where I was, and, you know, at least once, right? But I also remember listening to it quite often when I first found it. And I thought that listening to it would bring back memories, but it didn't. I don't remember a single song on this album from back then. It was just like every song was just a new experience for me, and I don't remember any of them from back then. So I'm afraid this might be a short episode, because I'm not pulling on anything from back then for this episode.
Well, funny enough, to add to that, I had the first Curious Fools album, the one before this. Mm-hmm. And all I remember from it was I really liked the song Take Another Little Piece of My Heart, which is actually a Janis Joplin cover. But because I was a Christian kid, of course, I didn't know that. I liked it a lot, but I'm also not sure what that says about the album when the only song I liked and remember was a cover song.
Kind of makes sense to me, but we'll get to that as we discuss the music.
So I don't think I ever heard this album. And listening to these songs, kind of like you, there was none that I was like, oh yeah, I remember hearing this. Like, nope.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, that kind of, you've answered a lot of my upcoming questions, so I will I will skip a lot of them about memories. But, you know, what were you expecting before you listened to it again?
Honestly, like, I thought it was going to be like cheesy 90s alternative. And in my head, I had this like somewhere between Johnny Q Public and Reality Check. Do you remember Reality Check?
I don't remember what they sound like, but I remember maybe that seeing something by them. Yes. I don't think this sounds like what you were thinking, though.
No, not entirely. It doesn't sound entirely different from Johnny Q Public, you know, but I think it's because they have a lot in common as far as they're both pulling largely from Led Zeppelin and those early hard rock bands.
Right. First impression upon re-listening to it?
That maybe 90s alternative, or at least early 90s alternative, is just people who want to sound like Led Zeppelin? I don't know.
Right. I would also throw in U2 in places on this.
Well, yes, there's but we'll get there, but yes, I agree.
Yeah, I felt like it was a mixture of like 70s kind of riff, you know, like the guitar riffs, hard rock,
yeah, and then very also riff laden, yeah.
U2. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's let's jump in and tell us more about the album. Let's start with the first song, Con Con.
All right. So it's a pretty rocking intro, even if it is a bit obnoxious by my standards, which is going to be kind of normal for this album, where they kind of always have a fairly interesting intro riff. And then it like slows down and the vocals come in for the verse.
Right.
And the vocals almost always just like throw a damp towel over whatever they were doing before. Like it's just, I don't know why, but it's like, it's almost like the verse has to be more boring than the rest of the song. Like they're very formulaic on this album. I'll say that, even down to like, when I was typing up the lyrics, because I can't, I feel like an old man trying to read them out of this the CD case because they're so tiny. Even some of them I had to like literally take pictures of with my phone and blow them up. They're very formulaic, even down to like the way their lyrics go, where like in the verse they'll have like two pretty standard lines, maybe in the third standard line, and then the fourth line, or both the third and the fourth are kind of longer lines that kind of flow into each other. And like, it's just, there's a lot of formulaicness that's going on here. But anyways, the formulaic thing that we're talking about right now is that the verses are almost always, except for like with one, maybe one exception, maybe, are always more boring than everything else in the song.
Yeah. This is not one of those albums where like, there's songs where kind of the like the verses are actually catchier than the chorus, mm-hmm, in a weird way. You know, occasionally this is not one of those. Like the verse is always going to be different than the chorus, and you're going to know that they've switched
to the chorus. And the verse is always slower than the chorus. It's always like less instrumentation, you know. It's very.
The verses are kind of more open sounding. Yes. Yeah.
And I don't even know what to say. So they kind of go through a verse and then a little music thing and then another verse. They do have a little interesting kind of thing here. I want to play this for you. Like at the beginning of the second verse, there's like this like boing boing kind of instrumentation. I don't know what it is, but here, let's listen to it. I don't know what it is. It's kind of like sitar-ish.
Yeah.
I
noticed that, but had kind of forgotten until you pointed it out. It's interesting.
What's those things they call that's like a mouth harp?
Right. Yeah.
Could be that. I don't know.
Another thing, you can hear it in that clip you played that I wrote down. There are lots of toms in the verses. And actually, right, once you think about it, that's all you hear.
It's all you hear. It's true.
And I just wrote in my notes, why?
But honestly, I even made some notes through some future songs where if those toms weren't doing that interesting of stuff, I would have fallen asleep at that point of the song, you know, just because the verses are, and usually it's the first verse is more laid back, and then the second verse, the toms come in with a you know, just constant, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, the drummer on this is, he's not bored, he's trying to do a lot. Maybe too much, mm-hmm, in a lot of places, yeah, but he's quite busy.
Did you watch the Cornerstone 97 video that I sent you?
So, confession, yes and no. I basically fast-forwarded through every song and was just looking, sure, for what they said in between them to see if we could learn more about the band. Yeah. So I caught, fair, you know, parts of these songs because this is right after this album had come out. So they played a bunch of these songs.
Yeah.
And it was fine, yeah, but I was more wanting to just see if I could use it as a place to learn more about the band. I learned one thing I'll share in a little bit, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably the same thing as me. Yeah. Because they only talk about one song.
Right. Okay. Never mind. Yeah. You ruined my surprise. Oh, well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So, I mean, these songs were more entertaining on the live, I'll say that. But not that this song's pretty entertaining on the CD though. Like this is one of the faster songs on the album. And then we get to the chorus, and it's a pretty, honestly, pretty catchy chorus, but it's very 90s sounding to me.
Yes.
It really confuses me because, like, these guys claim that they're just, quote, just a rock band, and all their influences outside of U2 for the vocals are, you know, late 60s and 70s hard rock. But they sound very 90s alternative here, and I don't know. Like, that's where I just came back to, maybe early 90s alternative was just people who wanted to sound like Led Zeppelin.
Well, the beginning of this song, the first maybe just couple of seconds of that riff that starts in, to mm-hmm. me almost sounds like post-punk or something. Just that very beginning part. I remember when the CD first came on and I heard that, I was like, oh, this is not what I was expecting. And then it switched and I was like, oh, okay, now this is more what I was expecting.
Let's listen to that again here real fast. Yeah, there's some,
and that kind of that weird bass too with it, yeah.
Yeah, there's some real dissonance in the guitar there, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
But then that's about all it does. And that's pretty much the only part on the entire album that sounds like that.
true.
But
well,
you know.
There is the bridge there's the bridges on this song that kind of are a little bit weird too. Okay. Speaking of, the next thing that happens is a bridge instrumental after the first chorus. It's kind of crazy, and thankfully for me, it does not bring a classic guitar solo sound to it. It actually has a little bit, it's just kind of some crazy noise making. And I, you know, coming into this album, this being the first song, I was thinking to myself, oh, good. You know, that's, I like that the choice there wasn't just to break out into a classic, you know, classic rock guitar solo. It was just, there was kind of that dissonant guitar going on again with this just kind of, you know, noise making from the other guitar. But that's, we're not going to hear that again after this song.
Yeah, I thought this song kind of had a different sound than most of the others on the album.
It does, yeah, right. and it's like I said, it's by far the fastest song on the album. Another thing that stands out to me kind of later on in the song, as you pointed out, the kind of the drums are really on point for the verse. The bass is really on point for a lot of the song too. It has that kind of bouncy sound, you know, that, like you were talking about, and it's very just like, assuming it's not programmed, it's very cleanly played. I mean, it's almost impeccably played. Which is really true of a lot of the instrumentation on this album. It's whatever you want to say about the songwriting in this album, the instrumentation is not lacking in anything. I mean, it's very professional. It's very well done. But in that sense, it's also kind of boring.
Yeah, they're talented musicians. You don't listen to this and think, oh, they can't really play that well.
Yeah.
That's not a question.
After the second bridge, we get another bridge-like thing, which has like some distorted vocals going on in the background. But my big takeaway from it was, like, this is like proto Chugga Chugga, because it's just Chugga Chugga, and it's less annoying than Chugga Chugga. There's not much more to the song, and it ends with another one of those like bong sounds that we were talking about earlier, and that's... That's it, you know? And for me, even though it has like this 90s alternative sounding chorus and these 70s hard rock kind of guitars, I felt like I was just listening to an 80s hard rock song.
What did you think about the lyrics?
So, I have some thoughts on the lyrics. I don't know if I'm right. I'll read the lyrics here because they're not long.
Yeah, they're short on almost every song.
They're very short. The first verse is, set it shut, mark it down, print the form, price the tag, because what they want is what I have. Then the chorus is, because I'm good and I'm clean and I see everything. Look at you, look at me. I am all you can be. I've got nothing to hide because I live the perfect life. And then the last verse is, drop the lights, start the roll, because when it's tight, it moves the soul. And in the lyric book, where it says, drop the lights, start the roll, after roll, it has in parentheses, dat. And dat is a form of a tape that's used a lot when recording music, kind of between your classic, like, large tapes and modern digital recording. So here's my hypothesis on what this song is about. I think maybe it's about how Christian bands are always telling you how you don't measure up to the kind of Christian they are. And so it's maybe like a tongue-in-cheek, kind of like that All Star United song, you know, the first that one All Star United song that was like about a similar thing. And that the verses are kind of about like how they're selling that as a product. Mark it down, price the tag, drop the lights, roll, start the roll, because when it's tight, it moves the soul.
Yeah, I could see that. I was thinking of the chorus. I kind of stuck on that and so the chorus again is, because I'm good, I'm clean, I see everything, look at you, look at me, I'm all you can be, I've got nothing to hide because I live the perfect life. I was thinking of the opposite of the chorus, which is like basically would be like, I'm bad, I'm dirty, I've got a lot to hide because I live the perfect lie, basically, instead of life. And it made me wonder, because this song is called Con Con, if it, like, this is a con, like, people are acting like they've got their stuff together, but in reality, nobody does. And
interesting.
That's the truth. Which then makes me think about original sin and all these ideas in evangelical culture, which I think actually are pretty destructive when you start thinking about them. But the song doesn't get that deep on it.
Right.
But it made me wonder if they're trying to just be a little more clever, but basically saying, like, I'm really not that great.
That's interesting because they don't say the words con on the album version of the song, but in that Cornerstone song version, they kind of end like on just like two hards, like dun dun, kind of, you know, like from the guitars and drums. And the vocalist yells con as they do like dun dun.
Huh. Okay.
So that maybe gives some credibility to your interpretation.
Yeah. It's, I mean, again, this is a struggle to try to figure out what the lyrics mean on this album because they're really vague and they're not very long.
Yeah.
And so no idea, but this was honestly for me, this was one of the clearer songs I felt like lyrically that I was like, okay, I think I know what they're meaning. Cause after this, I start to struggle.
Yeah. And our interpretations probably aren't really that far apart.
They're not. No.
And anything else I think is half the song would have to be gibberish. Like, I don't know what to do with it. If something like that is not the interpretation,
right?
Not that it's not a little bit gibberish already. Set it shut, print the form. I don't know what those are about.
Yeah.
Part of me feels like he was just trying not to say something too cliche, because set it up, mark it down makes more sense than set it shut, mark it down, because then you have up, down, which is not clever, but it feels like it's clever, you know?
Right.
All right.
He does that with this. We're going to get to it in a second, but on this next song, there's one part in the lyrics too, where I'm expecting him to say something. He's expecting him to say one thing, but he says something else. And I'm wondering if he twists it, you know, different times during this album to kind of throw you off. Mm.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that one.
Yeah. So second song, You're Dangerous.
Yeah. So this one starts off with another catchy riff that firmly, once again, kind of sounds like early 90s alternative to me. Again, the vocals come in very lethargic and breathy, and this song it's not near as fast as the previous one, because that's the first song is by far the fastest song. But you know, it's just, I don't know. By the second song, I was already like, oh, so this is what we're gonna do with our verses. We're gonna just get tired during the verses for some reason, you know.
You're a cowboy.
This one, I immediately thought he wants to sound like U2 when he came in on the verse. Like, this one, immediately, I was like, okay, he's trying to be like Bono, like, for sure with this song.
Yeah. And even the first chorus on this one is pretty bland and kind of brings no energy, which is disappointing because the live version from Cornerstone 87 on YouTube, this song is much more rocking, and a lot of it's because he kind of, like, screams the vocals on the chorus, which are "You're dangerous, you're beautiful, you're dangerous, I am weak and you are cool."
Right. Which, again, I was expecting "I am weak and you are," I mean, what would you expect there?
Strong.
Yeah, thank you. That's the, so I feel like he was twisting that line, and we'll talk about what it means in a second, but
yeah. Right. Yeah. By the second verse on this one, the U2-ish, the Bono-ness of the vocals were really starting to hit me pretty hard. You know, I don't have a lot to say about this song because it's, even though it seems important to the band and it seems to be one of the more popular songs when you're looking at what people mention online, it's kind of just a boring song. There is, I mean, the only thing really interesting is that at the end of the song for the recorded version, it sounds like someone's kind of screaming as the guitars kind of fade away.
All right, I like that.
And that's kind of the most interesting thing that happens. But it's once again, it's just more of this kind of riffy, hard rock guitar stuff with U2 vocals. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought even lyrically, this reminded me of U2 mm-hmm. talking about being a killer and you're dangerous, you're beautiful. This is in the U2 realm, yeah. especially like Octung Baby, like early 90s.
Yeah.
U2. It made me lyrically on this. I wasn't sure, but it almost seemed like he was trying to parallel like a positive thing with a negative thing. So he's like, you're a cowboy, you're a shooter, a devil with your smile, a villain, a healer, a killer with your eyes, I'm taken. And then, you know, the chorus again, you're dangerous, you're beautiful, you're dangerous, I'm weak, and you are cool. I was wondering, is he addressing the devil here? I mean, because the next verse he says, you're a bottle, you're a needle, obviously, you know, addiction kind of things, a breath without mm-hmm. a sigh, you're a symbol and a switchblade shooting at the sky. I don't know.
Symbol there is with is C, so like a symbol like on drums.
Right. I don't know. I mean, this is the one he talked about in the video.
Right.
You know,
why don't you tell us what he said?
He said, and I kind of wrote part of it down. He basically said, look, I want to be honest. I've stood up here and lied. And for the first time in a long time, I feel like God is in my life. And then he said, but that being said, you know, I had some times in the past, but I've kind of learned something from them. And he said, this song is about that. Mm-hmm. Kind of like we're saying, I mean, obviously, again, bottle, needle, all these things. I don't know how much of that he personally struggled with or if he's just referencing temptation and things, but.
That interpretation makes sense, right? Especially with the chorus, which is you're dangerous, you're beautiful, you're dangerous, I'm weak, and you are cool. Because instead of leaning on someone who's strong, he leaned on something that was cool, right? So that makes sense, especially, you know, from this, you know, evangelical Christian perspective. But then the verses I have a hard time making any sense out of, because as you said, you're a cowboy. Well, is a cowboy a good or bad thing? You said it was a good thing, but I don't know. Is it a good thing?
Yeah, I don't know.
You're a shooter. A devil with your smile, but they spelled you're wrong. Guys.
I know. I don't know how they screwed that one up. They made it more complicated. They made it you are. Yeah.
All right. A villain and a healer, a killer with your eyes, I am taken. And then, of course, you're a bottle, you're a needle. A breath without a sigh. What's a breath without a sigh? I don't know. A symbol and a switchblade shooting in the sky. And then the last word is take it, your last line. So I don't know. I think your interpretation is probably the right one, but what the hell do these verses mean?
Yeah. And that's what you're going to ask yourself a lot when you listen to this album, because they're all short. They're not clear. Also, by the way, if you haven't noticed, the song titles are like one or two words, mostly mm-hmm. one word usually.
Yeah. This one is you're dangerous, but the you're part is in parentheses. So it doesn't even need that. It's just dangerous.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the albums we review, especially because, again, it's Christian music, they leave nothing to the imagination. So it's very clear what they're talking about. And this one is the other end of the spectrum. Not at all sure.
In the end, I think we can just say it's, you know, it's worldliness.
Right.
The one thing, so I'm not done yet because it's really rough, but I've been reading, at your suggestion, I've been reading Jesus and John Wayne. And so the thing that jumped out at me here was the you're a cowboy, you're a shooter.
Right.
And the parallels of that into the brand of masculinity that is talked about in the evangelical circles in that book, which is a very cowboy masculinity, obviously. So that jumped out at me because that's when I didn't know whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, because the evangelical community, especially around this time, has a very pro, like, and even today, you know, but like a very pro cowboy kind of, you know, looking at it. But at the same time, in the past, cowboys wouldn't have been something to look up to because they were kind of very world weary kind of people in real life. They were on the land, and I guess, you know, you can look at that however you want to, but they're a very hard world weary people, you know, that did whatever it took with or within the law to survive, not really to do the right thing or to do good.
Yeah. Of all the things, why you're a cowboy, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I get that you're a shooter. Like, a lot of the stuff makes sense. That's probably the weirdest line, aside from you're a symbol.
Well, let's move on.
Yeah. And speaking of lyrics that I didn't understand, I really can't wait for your take on this next song, Angel, because I've got all kinds of questions about what he's trying to say on this one.
All right, let's do it. So according to that last one was a single, They mentioned in the Cornerstone video that it was either placing number 6 or number 3. There was a little bit of a dispute, but it didn't say on what chart, but it was a single. This one, Angel, according to Last FM, is the most listened to song on the album. And they also play this one at Cornerstone 97. And I've seen it mentioned a lot online as it being, you know, people's favorite songs on the album. So it starts off with this kind of like a pretty memorable kind of chord riff that has quite a bit of kind of a chorus effect on it. And for Curious Fools is a pretty low gain. And this riff kind of becomes a motif through the entire song. And eventually, and I know this is going to be surprising, so I hope everyone is sitting down, but eventually they like even add some overdrive to that riff towards the end of the song to kind of just, you know, make it hit more or whatever. As the verse kicks in, though, it's just pure U2 soft hard rock. The vocals are breathy and, I don't know, aiming at sincere, I guess, but the lyrics are pretty cheesy, and so they're hard to take seriously. This is the first verse. Don't make a sound. Just let her sleep. Underneath the clouds. Find soul to keep. Yep.
Yeah, what? Because where I'm going with that doesn't seem good.
Well, there's, I don't know. Let's come back to it. Because okay. I have questions. And then, you know, the song, the intensity of the song kind of picks up for the chorus because, oh, and the vocals kind of get a little more gruff, you know, because you got to like really hit that soft rock ballad. I don't know. I can't do it anymore, Jay. I don't want to talk about this song. It's so boring.
Well, he strains, like, on, he does this a lot on this album, is you're right, the soft vocals on the verse, and then the chorus kind of, she's all right, like, straining,
yeah,
you know, and I remember in my notes, I was like, I don't like this, and I don't know why, because I love bands like Knapsack, who that's, like, their formula, that's exactly what they do every single song, but this, I'm just not into it on this album. I don't, they do it on other songs, too, and I'm like,
yeah. It's not what his voice was made for. I don't.
Yeah, think, I don't know. I honestly,
and also
like
there's nothing.
I would say I like his voice on the verses more than I like it straining on the chorus.
Yeah, and you know, like with Knapsack, their lyrics are of content that you understand the straining of the vocals, and here they're just corny, right? So here's the lyrics for the chorus, which are even cheesier than the verse. She's all right. She'll be my little angel tonight. She's all right with me. It's all right with me. So, I don't know. It's kind of creepy. I don't know. What? Okay, do we want to just stop and do... Okay, let's just... The only thing I have to say about the rest of the song is if the chorus properly creeped you out, you're in luck because it happens 3 more times and then the song is over, okay? And I kind of like, I both at the same time understand why this is the most popular song on the album and am completely baffled by it. You know, it's just, I don't know.
I mean, let's finish up the lyrics because you left a little bit out of the first verse.
I did.
And you left out the last verse. And I feel like you kind of need the whole package before we kind of decide what we think they mean.
Give us that package.
Okay, so I'll just start over because, again, it's short. It says, don't make a sound, just let her sleep. Underneath the clouds, find soul to keep. In the thrill of it all, there's nothing yet. Deep beneath the charm, there's nothing left. And then the chorus again is, she's all right, she'll be my little angel tonight. She's all right with me, it's all right with me. And then after that, the verse, don't say a word, there's none to speak. When the feeling's strong, the spirit's weak.
And they got the spirits wrong again here. The spirit is wrong. The spirit is weak, sorry. But they just wrote the spirits, like plural.
Right. I mean, my notes just said this. What in the world is this song about? It's gross.
It is gross.
Right? Like, don't make a sound. Just let her sleep. Thrill of it all. She's all right. She'll be my little angel tonight. Yeah. You know, when the feeling's strong, the spirit's weak. Like, ugh. I don't like this.
I've got two interpretations for this song.
Okay.
And they are not great together. So I don't know which one I want to do first. Well, okay. The first, when the song started, I thought it was about like a daughter, like a young daughter, like a child daughter, right?
Okay.
Don't make a sound, just let her sleep underneath the clouds. But then there's that weird line, fine soul to keep. I don't know what that means. Fine, mm-hmm. whatever. But then we get to, in the thrill of it all,
right.
There's nothing left. Deep beneath the charm, there's nothing left. So now this is sounding more like a lover, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then we come to, she's all right. She'll be my little angel tonight. She's all right with me. It's all right with me. Which kind of combines the two ideas in this really gross way where...
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's very protective. That chorus sounds very protective to me, right? And if we're talking about a lover, it's still gross. Like, it's more gross, I should say. I don't know. She'll be my little angel tonight. I mean, first off, it's just too cliche. First off, fuck you guys. It's too cliche. And you should have been more clear about whether you're singing about a young girl or a lover, because it's just... This is weird.
Right. And I mean, then there's that last verse, don't say a word. So it's like, I can just imagine like finger on the lips, like, shh, there's none to speak. When the feeling's strong, the spirit's weak, which is like, like, what are they doing? I mean, I don't know. To me, this is like molester stuff. No.
There is some real molesty things going on there. But the other side of that is, if it's a lover, it's like, well, we shouldn't be fornicating, but, you know, spirit's strong, so, or the feeling's strong, you know, so let's f***.
Yeah, it's, I think even just the chorus, if they'd left out the word angel, just like, she's all right, she'll be my angel tonight, it would have gone over better with me. But adding that word little in there,
yeah.
And then what you're right with the stuff that seems like a daughter in the first verse and the last, I don't know. It's just like, nope, I don't
because
like this.
Also, don't make a sound, just let her sleep.
Yep.
Who is he talking to? Like, if it's a daughter, he's talking to the mother, right? That's fine.
Right.
Or someone else, but let's just say the mother, right? It's fine. But if it's a lover, which it has to be for that last verse to make sense and not molesty, then who are you talking to in the first verse? Are you talking to yourself? Like,
right.
And what's, I don't know.
I know.
And what is fine soul to keep? That line actually, I skipped over it, but that kind of reminds me of like, I don't know what it is, but it's not coming to mind right now, but it reminds me of like some like childhood prayer
mm-hmm.
that brings it more to the daughter side of the interpretation to me, right?
Like, I pray the Lord my soul to keep.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, there you go. Right? Yeah. And so, like, if it's a lover, that, I don't know. I don't know. That I'm very confused. And it is gross, though. Even if it is a lover, it's still a gross song, you know, because it's... still a little rapey and
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah. This is where being vague in your lyrics can get you in trouble because like you're not, you know, you've got just enough in there to get people thinking this way. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know how else you're supposed to interpret this.
So you said this was originally released on Via to only the secular market, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I feel like if you don't have young evangelical Christians reading these lyrics, they're going to come up with a different interpretation than what we just came up with. They're maybe just sticking to the lover part, right?
Right. Wait. So wait, you think evangelicals come up with what we come up with more?
Well, I'm saying, I think that my interpretation is very colored by, I'm trying to look at this through an evangelical lens, right? A young evangelical lens that I would have looked at it through when I was a kid.
Right. Where you probably wouldn't have assumed molester stuff, or you would have?
I would not have.
Okay.
Right. Make sure. I would have just assumed lover.
Yes.
And okay. not daughter or young person at all.
Right. But now that you're not in that world.
Right. Yes.
Oh, but yeah. I don't know how. I mean, really, like, there's just too many little things in it that you think this is weird, gross, yeah, and weird. So I don't know if they thought, hey, we're going to have a molesty song on this, so we're only going to release it to the general market and not the Christian one. And then
that's
somehow
not
the people,
what I meant.
Somehow the people at Goatee just let it slip through. I don't know.
What I meant was that if you're only releasing this to the secular public, then maybe you, like, if you're looking at this through a secular lens, you know, if you bought this at Hastings instead of at Mardell, then you're just looking, like, anything that sounds like a love song is a love song.
Yeah, right? yeah. No, you're right.
We don't need to read other things into it, like maybe it's God or maybe it's something like, you know, maybe it's a daughter, right? Like, anyway, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something with equally weird lyrics, but not as gross.
Okay, good. So, I think you want to talk about the next song, Love is Believing.
Yeah. And I don't have anything to say about the song, really. it's on the Cornerstone 97 video, so I felt like it was important to them. So we'll mention it here, you know. It does the on the Cornerstone 97 video, it does go straight from Angel into this one, Love is Believing. It's a super boring song, except for the fact that every once in a while he's like, yeah! And that's pretty funny. Yeah! But I want to read the lyrics here. Listen to me, but don't hear a word. Speak to me, please. Get beneath what is hurt. Yeah. But not yeah. Okay. Break what you bend. Deliver the sting. Build up again. Then cut loose the string. Yeah! Yeah! Just drive your nails beneath my skin. Pain tips the scale where love begins. If love is believing, this is the chorus. If love is believing, then I'm in deep. If wanting is needing, you're all I need. Second verse. I'm a killer, a liar, a thief, but love is a healer, forever a dream. I push my souls into the ground as I feel the heavens sinking down.
And it's a love song to Jesus, baby.
Is it? Is it about the crucifixion? But, okay. Is it about the crucifixion?
I mean, I got hints of that. I also...
Yeah.
The part where he says, I'm a killer, a liar, a thief, but love is a healer. Right. I felt like that was saying, like, you know, even if you've lusted in your heart, you've committed adult, like those kind of things.
Right.
Like, just because I've thought about it, I must have done it. That idea.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, exactly. I don't know what listen to me, but don't hear a word means. Maybe he's saying, like, that's what people did to Jesus, that they heard him, but they heard him, but they didn't. They listened to him, but they didn't hear him.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And then it says, speak to me, please, get beneath what is hurt. Break what you bend. So don't just bend it. Go ahead and all the way break it. Deliver the sting. Build up again, then cut loose the string. Just drive your nails beneath my skin. Pain tips the scales where love begins. If love is believing, then I'm in deep. This is grossly fetishizing, like, emotional pain, right?
Right. Like, I really need, I'm assuming it's God, right? I really need your love, God. So, you know, drive nails into, yeah, exactly.
If wanting is needing, you're all I need. This is abusive. Like, this is, maybe I should say it's glorifying an abusive, like, mindset.
And when you think about this one following that song, Angel, I mean, these guys were into some weird shit. Like, this is...
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe this is supposed to be coming out of a darkness of where he wasn't walking with God. I don't know, right?
Right.
But this is very Christian. This is definitely crucifixion stuff going on here.
Yeah.
And I think it's very much like, I want to be healed, so hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the only way you can fix me is to hurt me more, so hurt me, Daddy. You know, like,
And also, I wanted this idea of I want to feel something. So, and even if that's pain,
well,
you know,
okay,
kind of thing. I don't know.
That's more understandable than where I was going with it.
Where you're going with is more fun, but
but I don't. I mean, but is that in here? Like, is it? Is there? I want to feel something, so it might as well be pain. Type thing.
Not necessarily. No, but I'm just wondering. Like, you know, he says, "Speak to me, please. Get beneath what is hurt." Like, I'm really hurting.
Like, dig it out.
Yeah, and so whatever it takes, like, you know, get in there,
and then hurt me to make me better.
Yeah,
because pain tips the scales where love begins.
Right.
See, because I think there's, like, your interpretation is fine with the first verse, right? Get in there and dig out what hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But the next verse is definitely like, and it should hurt. Like, make me hurt.
Yeah.
Because I deserve it. And that's really what love is. Love is pain.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems to fetishize and pain to
me. Well, I mean, what is the crucifixion, right? Like, I mean, isn't that love is pain? I mean, exactly that, which, yeah. And then how do you take that into think about that personally and what that means for you want from God? I don't know. I mean, it's kind of, I hadn't thought of it like, you know, I need personal pain from God because that is him loving me. I don't know. It gets.
Yeah. And I will say that maybe I'm coming from that, from like the weird interaction of the very crass evangelicalism I was raised on, combined with like my anxiety issues, you know, where there's definitely a lot of that, like, well, if I'm not hurting right now, if I'm not suffering, then am I really keeping my eyes on Jesus?
That's a good point, because I feel like, I don't know if that was an explicit message you always heard, but that was very like implicit and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You definitely like, yeah, we heard that a lot without them actually saying
it. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on from that to something just corny.
Well, yeah. So, you know, we're skipping kind of some middle songs. So that was,
I do want to mention 7 just because it's on that Cornerstone 97 video. So I feel like they maybe think it's important.
Yeah. Know? Let's talk about it.
And I also just like, so it's called 7, S-E-7, like the numeral 7 E-N, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this came out 2 years after the 1995 film 7, which was also spelled S-E, numeral 7 E-N. But it's not about cutting off people's heads. So that's good.
Yeah.
It's a really 80s, kind of a really early 80s song to me. In fact, I think I wrote the note here. This song belongs in the early 80s. Someone send it back where it came from. I'll just read there's two choruses here where that's kind of the same thing, but they kind of change it a little bit. One says, the sky rolls on, the perfect number shines so bright, and I want to see the way. And then later on it says, and I would fly, the perfect number shines so bright, and I could find my way. And then, like, kind of under his breath later on in the song, he says 7, 7, 70 times 7. But weirdly enough, In the album art, the word 7 never actually shows up on this page. There is a number 18 on this page, but the number 7 shows up in the background of the previous page.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they messed up a little bit there on the album art. But more importantly, what? Like, I don't understand the perfect number thing. Anyways, that's all.
Yeah, like, why are they spelling it like the movie, which obviously they knew about, because this, actually, right. I think when this was recorded, it was just, like, the year after it came out.
Probably so, yeah.
So, Also, why is it the sixth song on the album, but it's called Seven? I don't know. That's driving me crazy. Yep,
I know, right? I there were so many things wrong with this being Seven. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they're singing about a number, the perfect number. Yeah. I mean, 70 times seven, that's a biblical reference, of course.
It is, yes. Yeah. And if they wanted it to be more meaningful as seven, they should have made it the seventh song, as you mentioned, and they should have got that seven on the background of these lyrics, which are on a page by themselves, so they could have.
You know? Mm.
Yep. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, so kind of, and Seven maybe does this a little bit too. What I kind of was saying is I felt like, okay, the first couple songs in some ways reminded me of U2-ish 90s alternative. I feel like these last couple songs we're talking about are much more of a throwback to like 70s, especially mm-hmm. the next one we're going to talk about, the riff in it. Very like 70s hard rock. It's almost like when you listen to the album, you don't maybe notice a change as much because I think each song kind of drifts maybe more towards that. And by the time you mm-hmm. get here, you don't realize it. But when you skip from some of those first songs to this one, you're kind of like, oh, this is a change. So I think the song we're going to talk about is the ninth song on the album called Magic.
Yes. And once again, guys, guess how the song starts? With a fairly catchy riff. And once again, guess what happens when the vocals come in? The song gets way more boring. And this is where it was really getting to me that all the song structures were exactly the same. But what I really want to talk about here is the chorus, because when we get to the chorus is when I immediately recognize that I probably would have liked this song when I was young.
Yeah.
So let me play that here real fast. I can't.
Background vocals too, which is kind of a new thing.
Yeah, the chorus has this kind of like, you know, question answer setup thing, and the response is it magic in a very like disco sort of way,
right?
Yeah, there's such corny delivery. But the lyrics are, how can you thrill me to my soul? Is it magic? How can you kill me when you go? It must be magic. So yeah, and the verses are honestly entirely boring, and the only redeeming part of the song is the "Is it magic?" But also, like, this song feels like, even in that kind of catchy chorus, it feels like it's missing something, and it took me a while to kind of figure it out. But increasingly in this part of the album, all the songs had kind of just like this wall of sound guitar, you know? And then we get to this one where it's a little more funky and it doesn't have that wall of sound guitar to it all of a sudden. And so it feels like it's just like a little empty. But they had to do that to get the corny disco thing in there, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did you notice there's a couple of lines of lyrics that are not in the lyrics but are said in the song?
Are there?
After the guitar solo, which of course is in this. Of course they have a guitar solo in this one. He says this, and I noticed this is in Lyric City. He says, dangerous toll, I should know, a delicate line, when it's crossed in time, I can't imagine. Not that that really clarifies much, because again, you know, with the lyrics on this, I mean, I was curious what you thought this song meant.
I think it's about a crush.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a different interpretation?
I'm hoping it's just a crush and not some weird molester stuff again.
I mean, it's a little creepy. I shiver to the bone when I see you walk by. I never trust myself to look at you straight in the eye.
So what is he looking? Well, yeah, anyway. Well, okay.
Yeah, no, right? Or maybe he's just saying, if I look you in the eye, then I'm like, you know, it's like, oh, you're all the only thing I can think about or something.
Okay,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's a better interpretation. Right? Yeah,
I'm going with that. And then there's the chorus that we've already said. And then Take a Look at Me, You See You've Got Me Digging Deep, A Treasured Deception, Let Me Stay a While When I Should Leave. I like that. Let Me Stay a While When I Should Leave.
Yeah.
It's not very evangelical Christian, but it's very nice. It's that there's, I feel like there's a lot that you can, the young love that you can fill in that line.
That, you know, and that's the thing with some of these lyrics. There'll be occasional line that I like. Mm-hmm. Now, it's one line out of one song, and overall, mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of it all, but he's clever occasionally with certain lines.
I mean, I feel like that one song kind of paints an entire story of, like, it's getting late, I should go home, but I don't want to, you know, I'm enjoying the time together, you know?
Right.
You know, the, like, we stayed up all night talking kind of thing. But yeah, honestly, I just wanted to cover that song so that we could do the Is It Magic? But also because I feel like 15, 16-year-old Clifton definitely would have liked that Is It Magic thing.
You know? I would have probably liked that riff, too. It's very, yeah. I'm not a huge classic rock fan, and I wasn't then either, but it's got a nice, like, riff to start off the song, and I think,
yeah.
You know, it's hard not to like.
Yeah. And I could also see this one being played in youth group, because it's pretty unassuming and kind of, you know, kind of corny.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Stone, the next song.
Yes, the next song. So, this one has like a kind of a somewhat memorable, you know, and catchy intro riff. It's, I don't know, it's a little more, it's probably one of the more boring ones in the album, honestly. But something happens, Jay, on this song that's super unique to this album.
Okay.
The vocals on the verse are catchy.
What?
They also almost seem like modern for this, you know, 96 era.
I see what you mean. Yeah. It's not just whispering, you know,
verse. Right. So. I mean, and that's actually not the entire first verse. There's a kind of a boring part before that. And then he gets into that kind of, you know, yelly thing there. And then I like how, like, the instrumentation mostly drops out except for the bass. And he kind of goes back into that boring thing so that it's like a nice contrast where that boring thing kind of works after the exciting thing. But then here's what happens in the chorus.
Say that sounds very 80s, right?
Like, right. I feel like that just could be like, that could be like any almost like radio friendly hair band of the 80s.
Yeah, that's chorus, exactly right? What I was thinking. And I hadn't noticed it till you singled it out like that. But yeah, it's kind of like, oh, what? Okay.
Yeah, that's what hit me was just this how like just 80s hard rock hair band radio airplay kind of. It's right. Kind of fun, you know. Then we get another verse and that chorus again. And one thing that I will say they've been pretty good at on this album, even though the songwriting isn't amazing, that when they go into like the second repeat of a verse and chorus, which they always do because all the songs are arranged the same, they do sonically change it up. So it's not entirely boring, but on this song, they don't. It really is just sonically the same thing again. So it's kind of boring. And then we get a really corny guitar solo and another chorus or two, and that's it.
Yeah, it's, you know, we talk sometimes on this show about, like, we hypothesize about songs that were written before other songs on the album and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But this is their second album, so they've kind of, I hope, defined their style. But, yeah, it's weird that chorus, because it seems
they just feel all over the place.
Yeah,
and I don't know a lot what the reception of this album was outside of the few things I could find online. I know that like HM and CCM and 7Ball reviewed this, but I couldn't find any of those reviews for this.
I looked back through like the Christian music news groups of the time and people liked this album.
Yeah.
But again, you only probably go in there to post if you really like it or you really hate it. So that's not the greatest. I will say people in the 90s Christian music recovery group on Facebook seem pretty fond of this album too when mm-hmm. Curious Fools popped up. So
yeah,
did have a lot of fans. that was the last song you wanted to cover, but I did want to talk about the very last song just for a second.
The cover song?
Yeah, because it's a cover, and it's Murder in My Heart for the Judge, which I don't think I'd ever heard the original one of this song. This was maybe not a number one single whenever this came out, but it's by a band called Moby Grape. Mm-hmm. And the thing about Curious Fools is their take on it sounds almost exactly like the original one. I went back and listened to the original one, and I was like, okay, this sounds pretty much the same. I don't know why it's the last song. Evidently, it was actually a hidden track when it was the Via release, and then when Gotiri released it, they made it not hidden.
Yeah,
I don't know why it's on there. I don't really get it.
Thinking that you're going to re-release this for the Christian market, where it's probably going to be consumed by, for this style, you know, younger teenagers.
Yes.
Having a last song that's Murder in My Heart for the Judge with no context is a little weird.
Uh-huh. And again, most of them are not going to know it's a cover.
Correct. Yes.
Even though it does sound quite a bit different, but yeah.
Also, the second to last song, Pool, which is like almost 8 minutes long, and I don't really want to talk about it, is very popular and people really like it, but I don't want to talk about it because I don't like it. So, yeah. But I did want to mention it.
Can I just say, I'm looking through Clifton's notes, and I love looking through his notes on these things because, for instance, the seventh song, Gold, your first bullet point was like, I'm not listening to this song again.
It's 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good. And
some of these songs do get kind of noodly at the end, almost like bluesy guitar stuff that I think neither one of us are into, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And I felt like Pool was that way, but people seem to like it. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's step back from the songs. What do we think about the overall kind of album? What about like the cover artwork?
So, the cover artwork is interesting, and so we should talk. Okay, well, let's just talk about it. So it's the first thing you're gonna notice when you see this is that the CD case, like the literal like plastic, is like a translucent red, and it has kind of like a geometric thing on it where it's like some ovals and crosshairs, and it says "Curious Fools," and then in block parentheses, I don't know what you call those, it says "Read" or "Red," whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the interesting thing about this whole packaging is that is the red see-through plastic, because when you take out the cover, the first thing that you'll notice is that it's not just some geometric things, but there's actually a picture of a bishop or something like that, or maybe like a Eastern Orthodox bishop or something,
right,
that has a like a singy face or a yelling face on it. That's in very light red. So, but when you put it in front of the red cover, it kind of fades that out, right? But also on other sheets, like some of the ones I had trouble reading, like the one with the sheet with seven on it, but also the sheet with Magic and Stone that we just talked about. And then the next one also with the last sheet with Take Me Back and Pull. There, it's very hard to read the lyrics on this. But if you slide the page behind the red plastic, the lyrics stand out a whole lot more, whereas originally they're colored such that they kind of, the colors kind of blend in, where it's a blue text on a yellow and red background. But when you slide it into the red, the blue turns black and the kind of the rest of it kind of fades away. So you can actually read it well, because it's otherwise almost impossible to read,
which is kind of cool. I'd admit it's, I like clever-ish stuff like that. Yeah. Okay.
The CD itself is kind of just like some concentric circles, like a stripey concentric circles, and then the back of the CD, which once again, you can see through the back, but there's nothing really interesting going on, just some black and white stripes. Not a lot to talk about other than that. It's kind of boring on the back, but some of the internal designs are not bad, and they definitely all have this kind of like double use, where if you slide them into the packaging, they change a little bit, except for there's one that's completely black and white picture, and that obviously doesn't do anything. But,
So it's clear they spent money on this, because the red packaging alone would have been different. And then it's a full color like booklet.
Yeah, it's like 14 pages or so.
I don't know if the original I would love to know if the original one on Via looked the same, if it had the red package and everything.
Yeah, that'd be good to know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Discogs was not clear. I tried to look it up.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that would be interesting is not just the fact that it's a curiosity, but that, and we'll get to this here in a second in more detail, but it seems like when Goatee signed them, there were, it seems like Goatee was probably excited about it, right? Like Goatee mm-hmm. saw something going on here that they wanted to get in on. It wasn't just another band for them. I think that they were trying to launch something with Curious Fools. I don't think it worked out. I don't think their songwriting is up to par. I think they're really good technical musicians, but their songwriting leaves a lot to be desired. So that probably didn't work out for them. And we know it didn't because, well, we'll get to it here when we do the closing. But did Goatee just pick up the album and re-release it, or did they come back and put more money into it to redesign the packaging is a very interesting question to me because of how much it sounds like they thought they was going to do something. And we should also mention here that Goatee Records is, what's his name from DC Talk?
Toby Mac is one of the people. Yeah,
he's not the only person, but he's one of the original like people who put money into it, you know?
Right. Yeah. And they were, I felt like Goatee Records was quickly kind of, I mean, maybe a independent Christian record label, but not really. Like, it felt like there was quite a bit of money behind stuff. And,
correct, yeah.
You know, it was, again, while it was sort of independent, and maybe it always was, it definitely, it was not feeling like Tooth and Nail or some of those others. Like, it felt much more polished.
And they had, you know, they had Johnny Q Public and Curious Fools. Other than that, though, they were largely, like, kind of like that rap, that, not just...
Yeah, they had that band Grits.
Yeah.
They also got Reliant K later, which is kind of an interesting...
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, so at least for first album or two. And I don't remember who else was on Goatee, but it was kind of a weird mix of stuff. But again, it always mm-hmm. felt to me at least pretty polished.
Yeah.
Not that different than like Forefront or some of the other more mainstream, right. I guess.
But Christian obviously labels. Aimed at more of an alternative. I don't mean it's just mean alternative music, but I mean alternative kinds of music, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they bring a lot. And even thinking back to the Johnny Q Public packaging, you know, it's very purposeful and you know, attempting at least to be artistic. But it has kind of that same kind of like clean, like very color laden, but clean style, you know?
Yeah. What about, we haven't really talked about recording quality. Like overall, what do you think?
Like I said, so these guys are very good technical musicians. And so everything about that is impeccable. Your musicianship is impeccable. The recording quality is spotless, and maybe it's because of that it's a little bit boring. I just think it's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I want to get. I don't feel like I've actually gotten, I mean, we can tell pretty much by what you're saying, but what's your overall take on the album?
That the songwriting is lacking. The musicianship is really good, but the songwriting is lacking.
Yeah. It references stuff that I'm not a huge fan of, like again the classic rock.
Right.
I like U2, but I feel like there's kind of only one U2. It just, yeah. I don't know. I remember I messaged Clifton after we decided to do this one, and I was like, "This album is so long. Why are there 14 songs?"
Well, yeah, that's another good question. Like, it's almost just short of an hour long, and there's no reason for it to be like.
Yeah, I know it was a slog at times. Like,
yeah,
okay.
It really was. And I mean, in some of the songs, like I made notes. Some of the songs we didn't talk about. I made notes like this could be a minute shorter, and it would be a lot better song. But they're not, like, they just keep going on. And I feel like they probably could have benefited from a producer who was willing to put something on the chopping block, maybe.
That's a good point, because didn't they self-produce this album?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly, I think.
Aha, okay. So, yeah, I think you're right. A different producer might have helped quite a bit.
Yeah, produced by Curious Fools, yeah.
There we go. So, catch us up now. Where are they now? What'd they do after this?
The band went on to put out another album called Electric Soul, also on Goatee, in 1998, and then they broke up later that same year. In 2004, a friend of Troy's put up a website for Curious Fools, but the band never took it over, and the website was really never anything more than a splash page with a picture, which is just curiousfools.com, and you can look it up on the Wayback Machine, and it changes a few times, like the picture changed, well, we can't see the picture on the Wayback Machine, but you can tell that the layout changes a little bit where they change the centering or they change the background color. But it's just a splash page with a photo on it, and the band never took it over. Stephen Murray on the vocals, like I said, he had that recording label Via Records. It seems to have ended, though, when Curious Fools signed to Goatee Records. I don't know. That seems weird to me. Like, I wonder if it was part of their record contract that he had to end the record label and dedicate to making Curious Fools successful. But he did photography and design on several albums in the 90s and early 2000s in the Christian music scene. but also for the Swedish new wave band The Sound, 2006, their 2006 album Dying to Say This to You. At the same time he was running VIA back in the early 90s, he helped grow a magazine called Syndicate Magazine. So it was already existed kind of just as like a self-published zine, but he came in and like grew it into an actually distributed full color print, like professionally printed magazine.
I got my hands on it on one issue of Syndicate, maybe two, way back in the day.
Really?
And then it kind of stopped. And I want to say Seven Ball kind of became like it to me. It felt like some of the same people may have been involved in that because Seven Ball kind of came out. It felt like almost out of Syndicate.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because I always felt like Seven Ball came out of nowhere, but I don't know.
That may, and this may just be my interpretation, but it felt like Syndicate kind of ended and then there was Seven Ball. So I don't know if they're connected, but
like I really never heard of Syndicate before I was doing the research for this. He started several businesses over in the entertainment industry over the years. In 2015, he founded Bingeable, which, and I'll quote here, fixes the entertainment industry by decentralizing the marketing and distribution of premium entertainment.
I don't know what that means.
But I think he just helps independent artists gain a better PR foothold without having to sign on to big record labels. Troy Deaton on the guitar. He played bass on My Little Dog China on Game Face. He produced and engineered the last Everyday Life album. Around 2010, he played bass with some friends that reformed a band called Atticus Fault. And they put out an album at that time. He still plays and has a home studio in Nashville. He's and I found some things where he was talking about considering putting out some more music, but he never has. And then Shane Atkins on drums. Here we kind of get a hint of what happened at the end of Curious Fools, because he is in a new band. So he was a successful software engineer. And back in 2005, he wanted to start working on music again. So in his spare time, he, for the next decade, worked on an album, and then in 2016 released a prog rock album under the alias Evership. And I think he may have had one other person with him on that project. But in the marketing releases for Evership, there is a hint at what happened to Curious Fools. It says, he made two records with the 90s alternative rock band Curious Fools, but after three labels, including the false promises from a large internationally known label that eventually dropped the band, with the birth of his first child, he decided to leave the music business for the budding software industry.
Interesting. Is that Goatee that they're talking about?
Probably so, right?
Huh. Internationally known? Well, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe in the Christian scene, you know.
Right. I mean, yeah.
I'm sure they're known in Canada.
Right.
That counts, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of everything I know about any of these guys. Did you find anything else?
No. You found, okay. Yeah.
That's it. I mean, it's pretty sparse out there. And Jay actually sent me some of that stuff too, where I had not found much. He actually went back and searched their names, whereas I thought to myself, Shane Atkins is a pretty, a pretty common name probably. So I'm not even going to waste my time searching for it, but he found a bunch of that stuff on there. Yeah.
Well, and this is another example of a band because of when they stopped. It was like really before the internet. I mean, there was internet, but it wasn't a big thing. And so it's hard to get where a lot of our bands kind of bleed over maybe into the early 2000s. And so you can dig up some stuff online. This one was difficult. Also, the name Curious Fools is not an easy one to search for.
It is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although if you search Curious Fools, like in quotation marks, you're not going to get much outside of the band. You'll get a few like art type things. Like there's a painting called Curious Fools, and there's an Instagram. The words Curious Fools are part of a longer name, for example. But it's still not a great name that's easy to search. Yeah.
So Clifton, do you have an award for this album?
Yeah, this is going to be a weird one. I'm giving this the Blank Stare Award. Only because the songwriting, I think, was boring enough for me to completely forget everything about this album except for the packaging.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's not a funny award. It's kind of a sad award, actually. But
where we are. And I'm going to be honest. I'm probably not going to listen to this ever again after this episode. Nope. So, yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. what are we doing next time?
We are going to listen to, this is a very rare thing here where we have planned ahead, where we always knew. And so when I say always, I mean, when we decided to do this out episode, we decided to do the Del Griffin's album as well.
It's the Del Griffiths, Clifton.
Oh, sorry. Del Griffiths.
It's I Like Me.
Okay. I Like Me.
No.
I
Like Me.
I Like Me.
Yes.
Exclamation point. Okay.
And there's a connection because the Del Griffiths was a side project of at least Murray and Deaton and the Curious Fools, yeah, for sure, if not everyone. But it sounds quite different than the Curious Fools, so should be fun.
Yeah, which is also why that didn't get mentioned in the histories or Where Are They Now part, because we're going to do that next time.
Yep. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Your Music Saved Us. If you enjoyed your time with us, please leave us a review or share this episode.
Visit our website, yourmusicsavedus.com, to find out all the ways to listen. We're on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Join our Facebook group or follow us to keep up with the latest or interact with us. Send complaints and disagreements to yourmusicsavedus@gmail.com.
The music in this episode is the work of Curious Fools and is used with apologies, not permission.
And this is where we would usually tell you where to go to buy things, but there isn't anything to buy. So, I don't know.
Yeah, check out Curious Fools SoundCloud, Goatee Records, maybe? Maybe
Goatee Records SoundCloud, yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe it does. I don't know. All right, thanks, guys.
Yep, bye, everybody.